Blog Talk Radio.
Believe everything the mainstream media tells you? We don't. We cover what mainstream doesn't. Welcome to Beyond the Mainstream with Donnie C, Texas Bob, and Cinnamon. Tin Hat.
All too often these days, the factory whistle is falling silent in America. But there is a way to get American workers back to work. Start buying more American-made products. Now, a Michigan-based company is leading the way in this movement to strengthen our economy. It's called AmericanMadeProducts.com. AmericanMadeProducts.com is more than a way to purchase American-made products online quickly and securely. It's a way to get our economy moving in the right direction. Go online or call and speak to a live customer service representative. American-made products.
Well, Nick, with you. Okay, how's everybody doing? Scott, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. You feel any better?
No, I just got a bad cold. Just a bad cold. Anyway, it's nice to hear from you for the 20th time this week.
Yeah, that's okay.
I know you've been working hard. Working hard.
Trying to take advantage of the situation, I guess, you know. Yesterday we had company, and of course we had a couple bad days of weather, you know, while we were off. So, anyway, it is what it is. We're moving right along. Did you have anything you want to talk about real quick? I mean, I know that you're having a problem with your email. People might want to know about that.
Yeah, I have to tell everybody that my email, something is screwed up big time. And I can't get the email rock and rolling like it should. And I got one, but we're not going to, you know, it's nothing to pertain to us yet, but we'll get to it. And I want to play this.
We're here today for the simple fact that we're fighting for equal rights and better insurance. Herbie Kohler feels that he shouldn't have to pay anymore. Well, we spent how many years out here helping him triple his net worth, and there he is, feeling that he's giving us an adequate contract. Well, it's raises to it. It's not right. You got somebody next to you that's doing the same job that can do it as good as a tier A worker that's a tier B worker. You should get paid the same. We feel that we're out here for, we're all brothers and sisters. We all work together.
Yeah, I agree. That was into that. That's, Steve Holt shared that, right, is from Wisconsin, Kohler, Local 833. And they're fighting to get rid of Tier 2 and get everybody up to speed on their medical. And they're fighting for the people that do the same jobs they do. I think that's pretty cool.
Right.
I thought that was pretty awesome.
Well, real quick, I guess, you know, we do support our brothers and sisters up there fighting for what they believe in. And, man, I've got a shout out to all the brothers and sisters out there in Wisconsin. You guys are holding the line right now. Something that, we thought we had tried at the Big Three or the Detroit Three that failed, whether by some outside forces, yet to be seen. But what you've got is if you can go to reform the UAW now, this is just one of the Facebook sites that I know of. Randy Bryce has set up a GoFundMe page for the donations.
Right.
And And if you guys could visit that, maybe I will share that over to Workers for Places and Means also. And then what we'll do is if you guys could, even if we just donated $5, a lot of people, that would be a lot of money. That would help our brothers and sisters if they're in this for the long haul. They don't go without. They're fighting a good battle.
Right.
A really good battle.
I agree.
And, like I said, you can go to this. In fact, with it, I'll get that over on our Workers, Workplaces, and Unions right now also. But Randy Bryce, he's an iron worker, and he's set up this GoFundMe account and to help our brothers and sisters out. And if we could help them in any way, that would be fantastic. We know that once throughout a week, which it's been a week now, they'll get $200 a week for a strike fund. So I mean, if we can help them out, that would be phenomenal. Also, right now, it's also over at members of the UAW. It's at the top of the page there, too. So if people are interested, there's pages to go to up and out.
Right.
It's also been pinned at the members page. So,
yeah, it's all over. Let's get it on your page, and we'll send some money and let them have a nice Christmas and help them through the week. You know.
Oh, absolutely.
Help through the month.
I believe that the GoFundMe page has been turned over to Region 4. So I don't have any more details on that right now. So
I don't.
So with that being said, I mean, next year, by the way, real quick, next year is in negotiations right now. And it's Saginaw, and Local 699 has extended their agreement deadline until 11:59 on December 1st.
December 1st?
Yep, December 1st. The union workers previously said they would strike if a deal between NextEra and UAW was not reached by midnight on November 25th.
Right.
Of course, you know, they didn't go on strike on Thanksgiving Day. So
no.
They did extend it to December 1st. Chris Brzezinski is the president of Local 699. He has said that the extension is the time needed to finish what he calls a deal his union members will be pleased with. I'm going to pause right there. Brothers and sisters up there at 699, pay attention to what happened at Chrysler, General Motors, and Ford. So if you think that's a good deal, ask one of these current people down here, and we'll tell you, be very cautious, extremely cautious. Watch your pensions, watch pension language, watch your health care language, watch your pay structure, watch your temporary, the tier language. There's a lot there to watch for.
Right.
And then I'll continue. He said that we're so close and with so much into the play and so many people, we want to make sure we have it right for our membership because it's going to affect everyone's life in the future, Brzezinski said. Now, well, we've all heard that song and dance 3 times now. Actually, we've heard it 4 times. Chrysler, once at General Motors, and once at Ford. So same old song and dance, folks. He said that negotiations continue between the union and the next year's Saginaw plant. We've been working really hard, and I really believe we can come to a good decision, Brzezinski said. Brzezinski citing a gag order would not go into specifics about the talks, but he did talk about one major hurdle both sides are trying to work through.
Right.
You can only imagine what that would be. He said that we're taking the national agreement that we were under from General Motors when we were GM plant, and we're bringing this to our own local agreement right now. So there's going to, from a lot of pages down to a smaller local contract. And next year's spokesperson said over the phone, the company is looking for a fair an equitable agreement to be completed in the near future. Brzezinski's union represents more than 3,300 next year employees. At this point, we are still in negotiations with contract, Brzezinski said. We are moving, and I feel that we will be able to get this accomplished for our members, and we'll have a good contract for everybody. In the meantime, union members are instructed to continue business as usual. Let me repeat that last sentence that he said. At this point, we're still in negotiations with the contract. We are moving, and I feel that we will be able to get this accomplished for our members and that we'll have a good contract for everybody. Brothers and sisters, please pay attention. Once again, watch anything around your pension language. Watch anything around your healthcare language, watch the hiring rates. Be very cautious, my brothers and sisters. Very, very cautious about this with next year. So,
I can't argue with that. We have a 313 on a. I'm going to get 313 up somewhere here. Bam, bam. I think I am. 313, you're on with us.
It's Jeff Brown.
Hey,
hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good, my friend. How you doing?
A little sore and tired right now. I just finished writing three letters for my uncle, who was a teamster and about to lose 60% of his pension. Teamsters are Mr. Hoffa's cutting people's pensions up to 60%. My uncle is has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And I just wrote letters to both our senators and our Congresswoman Dingell, or I'm going to air them out to the elected officials tomorrow. Other than that, I just been in bed most of this 4-day weekend. Tired and a little sore.
Yeah, busy and writing letters and, 60%. That's incredible. I didn't know it happened. I did hear something about the Teamsters losing pension, but I wasn't sure, so I didn't say anything. Because my father-in-law is a teamster. So I don't know. Let me get Leroy on here. Maybe Leroy knows a little bit more than we do. I do. Leroy? How are you?
Yeah, good evening. Good evening, brothers and sisters. It's Leroy McKnight, and it's always an honor to be on this show. I appreciate you having me on, Donnie and Scott. Regarding the issue of the Teamsters' pensions, yes, they are being cut. I typically run into a few union brothers at Thanksgiving at the buffet I go to with some friends and from my local and from other unions. And one of the fellows there was a Teamster. And he expressed to me that his pension is going to be cut 33%. And I asked him, "What, you know, why is yours so much less than the others that's reported up to, I've seen reports as much as 50%, but I'll take Jeff Brown's 60%, cut down to 60%. So this man then explained to me that it has to do with his age, depending on how old you are. And I asked him how old you are. He looked pretty good. And he says, "I'm 77 years old." So a man 77 years old who worked with Leaseway, as a Teamster, that's the company that drives cars, or used to, it's changed now, used to drive all the cars off the line. They put them on those trailers, you see, with the car haulers, and that's the job he had for some 30 years. And he's 77 years old now and going to lose 33% of his pension. In his case, he said that he'd be okay with a 33% loss. As you know, here in our own pension structure, after age 62, Social Security kicks in, and you get the vested part of your pension. Many of the folks, you know, that means about $1,500 approximately that you actually get, depending on how close to age 62 you actually worked. Could be as high as, you know, in the $2,500 range, but you get a substantial cut at age 62. And so if he took the early out, that they had a very similar contract to us, and if he took the early out and his portion of his pension is like $1,500, and then he'd probably get something in the neighborhood of $2,000 as a Teamster in Social Security, that means that he would give up about $500 a month, and he'd still have somewhere in the range of $3,000 a month. So I'm guessing that's why he said that he'd still be okay. I imagine at 77, he doesn't have too many bills,
right,
mortgage or any such thing as that. But yes, this is a hardship that's going to be really hard on some of the folks, especially those that might have went out before age 62. They would get, you know, if they had a 3,000, like in our case, I think it's $3,170. You lose a third of that, or 60% of that, I'm sorry, down to 60%. Then that would, you know, that'd take you down into that, you know, approximately $1,800 or so. And that'd be hard to live on for somebody that's used to living on near $3,000 a month. So until they got to age 62 and that would be reconfigured then. This is a real hardship on some people. Some are going to be okay, you know, but it's never, never good to lose money, obviously. So, but this man reported to me that he's at 77 years old. I mean, who starts taking money away from somebody that's 77 years old? And you know, the stock market's gone up, you know, just appreciably since 2009, from 6,600 up to 18,300, and we're not too far from that now. I mean, how can these pension funds be in such bad shape, this Teamsters pension fund be in such bad shape, you know, with all of that, you know, monetary attrition? You kind of wonder what's going on there. But it's a sad state of affairs, Donnie and Jeff and Scott and the rest of the listeners, with regard to this Teamsters pension. And we hope that doesn't get what's called contagion and start going into other pension funds. This language from the Pension Protection Act is very, very dangerous, that's been put into our own contracts here at the Detroit 3. I know Scott talked a little bit about the Kohler strike. There is this page. It's pinned on the members page at the top. This Randy Bryce iron worker, good brother up there, and iron workers are a pretty hardy bunch of folks. I got a lot of friends that are iron workers, and there's just a lot of history there. But this good brother has set up a GoFundMe account. And when you go over to it, it says that this page has been turned over to UAW Region 4. If you'd like to donate online, please watch for a link in order to be able to do so. And then I think this is the pound sign. I guess that's a Kohler strike behind it. So it's probably a Twitter that you're looking for there. But it's interesting. 39 people in 5 days have donated money. And the amount of money by 39 people, $1,615. At the beginning of the show, that's how much they raised. The average donation is around $41, average. There's one here that's $300 from an anonymous donor. There's a lot of $50. Scott hit it right on the head. You know, we know pretty much how many listeners are listening to this show. Think about this, brothers and sisters. If you go out to dinner or you go out after work and you buy your friend a beer, okay, and it's a nice place, so it's a $5 beer. I mean, I happen to know some of the restaurants out there, even a draft beer, some of them are $5 if you buy, you know, just not like the domestics, if you will. So a $5 donation would be like buying one of these Kohler workers a beer, okay? Just if you were just to give them a $5 donation, something that you do for your pal at the local bar or wherever, if you were to just give that modest amount to the Kohler strikers, and we know how many we're talking to here, this would make their Christmas. It would get them through the holidays, and it would help that they would not be starved out during this strike so that they'd have to go back and take something that was less than what's really due them. So if we can start here and put an end to this stuff that's going on to American worker and workers across the world, in fact, put an end to that tyranny. If we can just help them, this juggernaut that's come upon us, take a stand, send them a few dollars, $5, if everybody did that, they could just skate through this holiday season if every listener just gave them $5. And again, that site is pinned at the top of the members of the UAW page. And we know there's only a limited number that can get into that because there's 11,000 there. We don't have that on an open site that I know of yet. But under GoFundMe, I'll tell you what the link is. You know, obviously, www.gofundme.com. I hope you have a pencil, okay? It's only a few numbers and letters. Number and letters. Okay, you're / 4 ABSFVWC. It's that simple, okay? If you can't get into any one of the Facebook pages, and these are closed sites, I understand, but if and we know there's a lot more than 11,000 listening to this show.
Right.
So GoFundMe.com/ 4 ABSFWF. Geez, I'm getting it wrong here. Let's start over. GoFundMe.com/ 4 ABSFVWC.
There you go. Okay.
4 ABSFVWC. And that's the link. If you can't get into it through the one of the Facebook pages, that link right there will get you over there, and just, you know, just send them $5. I think it's this is a secure site. It's a HTTPS, so it's secure, and you can, you know, get the old Visa card out or whichever one you like, you know, and just donate just $5, folks. I mean, it's not going to hurt anybody. It's the price of what you're going to spend to have a nice drink the next time you have dinner or out with your pals, whether women or men. So, you know, let's make a difference. Let's put an end to this. Let's get these folks through this season and through this strike so that they can hold their head up high and get what they're due to them. And we also should say to the UAW, stick up for these people. Don't do what you've been doing lately. Stick up for them. Get them what they deserve.
Hear, hear.
Okay, so having said that, is anything else on the Kohler or the Teamsters that anybody wants to add? I got a little something I got to talk about here tonight.
Real quick, this was posted from local 833 about 8 hours ago. It's an update. The strike has gone national. We are looking as strong as ever. Yes, we admit there are a few that crossed the line, others who have already gotten new jobs, but the 98% that are out there on the line, some volunteering every day, are looking strong and united. We thank those who are out there and those in the community and across the state who are supporting us, walking with us, and donating to our strike fund. There is more support than we could ever have imagined. You all have put us in a good position, and hopefully now that the holiday is over, the company will meet in good faith at the bargaining table very soon. And that's
very,
the latest
very nice
report.
That's a brave brother that wrote that, let me tell you. That's a brave,
yeah,
brave bunch of folks over there to Kohler, brothers and sisters on the line. They all have families. They have little children. Teenage children, children that are trying to put through school, you know, make their car payment, their mortgage payment, and we need to stick behind these brothers and sisters. We really do. Again, $5 isn't going to hurt anybody. $5. Just look in your heart and send them a little something, and you know where to go now. So we've announced the link. So even if you can't get to one of the Facebook pages, There you have it. You can donate there pretty easily. Now, I hope you had a pencil when we did that. If not, we'll repeat it later. How's that, guys? You think we should repeat it later after everybody gets a pencil? Maybe? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. If I forget to get talking about something else, let's bring it back to that. So, okay. Anything else, Scott?
Okay. No. My email's all messed up, so...
Okay.
You have an email, so let's get Jeff thing to bring up.
Not really. I'm disappointed with the way Ford got the vote passed in. There's a lot of issues around the Dearborn truck plant, of some intimidation by international reps.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about that, reading a lot about that.
We need to teach the younger folks some things before us older folks retire. And, I know a couple of my younger coworkers, second-tier workers, are coming to me asking me questions, and I am very pleased to help them because once we're gone, they ain't going to know how to handle things. So,
no, they're there to ask. And if they do ask, they lie to.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Yep.
You're right.
A lot of the first-tier workers that I've talked to didn't know that the second-tier do not have a pension. And
that's incredible.
You know, these people got to start learning things now, getting involved, read books, talk to me or talk to some of the other full-timers. So that's all I've been trying to do is educate my coworkers.
That's something. I thought every tier one would know that.
No, they don't.
Jeez. That's incredible.
Well, we did not know that the second tier did not have any pension. And all they're looking at is that big money sitting out in front of them that they're going to be getting this coming Friday.
Right.
Just very sad thing. So I'm doing what I can do in educating them. I had the UAW Constitution on my forklift for over a week, showing people parts of the Constitution that our so-called leaders at the Dirty House are violating. The day of our vote, my plan, I voted, sat down, and in comes Dennis Williams, executive assistant to the chief of my plant. So he had to vote there. And he see me, and he didn't ask me about the contract. He didn't bring it up at all. He just heard that I wasn't feeling good, and before he left, I told him, I said, I really don't like a whole lot of people down there that you work with on Jefferson. And he kind of chuckled and says, I assumed that. So word has gotten out. The Solidarity House knows my name, and that's too bad. They want to come after me. Come after me. I'm ready.
That's right. You can't be afraid.
I don't play fair. I ain't got nothing else to lose.
No.
So,
right. Well, Jeff, you know, the good news is that even though this passed by a narrow margin of 50-some percent, when you take out the incentivized votes, the incentivized yes votes, and that's 28%, 28% of the people were paid enough to go buy a house to vote yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you take that out of there, and then they're... their numbers dwindle to 22% yes and 78% no. Okay, think about that.
Mm-hmm.
78% of the membership is downright angry at those folks down there in Solidarity House. They are just not happy with them. And
exactly.
I'm here to tell you that's a bad number. That number there is just astronomical. Okay, that is almost it's pushing into an absolute vote of no confidence. But it's certainly at 78% a vote of no confidence. And
right.
Too bad we don't have a parliamentary system. They'd be gone. We could just call for a vote. And they can't incentivize such a vote, so they'd just be ousted. You know, it's just too bad we don't have that. But you know, there's some ways to beat them at their game. They don't quite understand how that's going to happen to them yet, but I do. So we'll work on getting them gone. The other thing that you brought up, Jeff, is this: the tier twos don't have a pension, and I want to add to that, they don't have health care in retirement either, brother. They don't have either health care or a pension in retirement.
That's correct.
Okay, so I mean, when you're spreading the good news out there, spread it all. You know, make sure that everybody understands it's not just a pension they don't have. They don't get health care when they retire. You know, and if Medicare is still around, they'll get that at age 65 or whatever that gets morphed into by the time they get out. But you know, they're going to have to work until they die almost. That's what we fought against so that we could, you know, have a good retirement. You know, I look at people that never worked in the plant, and they're all, you know, standing tall and, you know, spindly folks and just, you know, well, in large measure, good health. And then I look around at all of us, and we, you know, the book on us is that we die 6 months after we retire. A lot of us do. And so we, you know, we have that. A lot of us have cancer. I can tell you this. Of the people that hired in at the time I hired in at Chevrolet Flint Manufacturing, and I'm going to blame it on the soluble oil and all the other chemicals in the air that we had in the plants where we worked, none of them are alive. I'm the only one that I know that hired in during my time that remains alive. Okay, and that was in 1969, early. So I'm just saying, you know, for them to be taken away from the good that was done over the years, you know, the Treaty of Detroit got us a more advanced pensions. That was a five-year contract that went into effect in 1950. And we're giving up this kind of stuff, things that have been around, in that case, 57 years when the 2007 agreement was passed that took away pensions from new hires and health care from new hires. Okay, they gave up a lot to get that in the Treaty of Detroit. It was a General Motors contract that Walter Reuther negotiated. It was a five-year contract, and it's better known as the Treaty of Detroit. But it describes the contract that they got. And they got a lot, but they gave up a lot, too. They gave up the right to strike for 5 years, a number of things. They gave up, you know, the idea that they could be a part of running the company. I mean, paragraph 8 came into being in 1950. So a lot of things were given up at that Treaty of Detroit, and here we are just, you know, squandering it, just giving it up, and it's just a horrible thing that's going on in this union at this time. It's not just our union, it's other unions. You've seen it in the Teamsters, as we just discussed a minute ago. So it's kind of sad, Jeff Brown, and we all, you know, are going through that. But the good news is there's 78% of us out here damn good and mad, real good and angry. Okay, at those folks down there. They really ought to be careful walking on the plant floor because they might slip and fall. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. That's not a threat. That's just, you know, there might be some oil on the floor somewhere.
Exactly.
So, having said that, I do have some news here regarding this appeal. We started at General Motors, and it's been advanced to the Ford folk, and this is the appeal that, and we're talking about pensions, so it's kind of a natural transition that I'd like to get into. So initially, we had an appeal to prevent non-participants in the pension plan from voting on our pension plan. So only plan participants could vote on it, whether they're active or if somebody takes initiative to allow retirees to be able to vote on their own pension plan. That's yet to be determined, but actives that are in the pension plan ought to be the only folks that are voting on this. And anybody not in the pension plan ought not to be voting on it. That's the principle of this appeal. And because of the demographics that are about to change when the younger people that are hired after 2007 start to control the UAW, they could do just about anything with our pension. And we would have to vote on that. If we prevented them from voting on it, then they couldn't do it. So if it was just, you know, like the skilled trades, items exclusive to retirees or pension plan participants would get to vote on those, and non-plan participants would be prohibited. from voting on it. And that's what this seeks to do. And it's a protection that all retirees, all 750,000 Detroit 3 retirees, and there's about 110 or 11,000, I believe, actives that are still in the plan, 80% of 143,000, somewhere in that number, just north of 100,000, still in the plan that are plan participants that still have a pension. And then those other 40,000 would be prohibited. But that 40,000 is going to grow as time goes on because of demographics. You know, the people are going to retire and they're going to replace them with new folks. It's quite that simple. And there's a big push on having that occur. So that's the purpose of this appeal. And then you're faced with how best to put it in. Okay, well, Article 38... I want to go over this, and this is part of why we picked Article 38 to do this, okay? It deals with elections.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to be clear, Article 38 is the only constitutional language governing elections, with the sole exception of Article 8 regarding international convention delegates. Further, Article 38, Section 10 states, the following rules shall be mandatory for all local union elections for executive officers. Okay. While mandatory only for local union executive officers, Article 38.10c further states, quote, all elections shall be held under the supervision of a democratically elected election committee, end quote. You will take proper notice that the operative and descriptive word in that sentence is all. You will additionally note that Article 38, Sections 11 and 12 serve as its own appeal process. So that's kind of why we picked Article 38. It is the only language that deals with the conducting of elections, the only language in the entire Constitution. Now, there's people out there that would say this was an article only for elected officials. But it's expanded when it says the word all, okay, all elections. And there are folks that say that there's no process for the ratification vote. Again, Article 38 says all elections, not just elected officials. And had we not gone through Article 38, you can bet your sweet bottom dollar, that we would be having a different conversation, because the IUAW would say Article 38 is the only governing authority for elections, and you missed it. Your 7 days are over. Okay, so it's a little bit of obfuscated language, and it's done on purpose so that they don't ever lose in the appeal process. But we have two bites at the apple. We have this bite and perhaps an Article 33 appeal. In the future, we have 60 days for that one. But the 7 days told from the closing of your local union's polls. That's how they've determined that. We've had at least one letter stating such. 7 days from the closing of your polls. And that's what the constitutional language says as well. Okay? And they're saying calendar days, not business days. So it's very clear how they're handling this now, okay? Now, since we talked last about this, we've gotten at least one response from one local union. We won't get into the local union, but we will get into how the response was figured. Now, remember, this was a Article 38, Section 11 appeal of this process of the vote, to split the vote. To prohibit the members that are non-plan participants from voting, okay? And we just simply say they shouldn't have voted, and then it's up to them to correct that if we prevail in this instance, okay? So the response that we got, and again, we won't get into the local union, but Remember, this was a 38, Article 38, Section 11. And here is the language that the response came. In accordance with Article 33 of the International Constitution, your appeal in regards to the 2015 GM-UAW ratification was considered as having no merit at the local level. Okay, so Article 33 response to an Article 38 appeal. Do you see how they really want to obfuscate and bifurcate the system? That means to split it somehow into two branches so that it's really hard to go to the next level and argue at the next level, because they will argue that you didn't have an Article 33, and that's the error of the local union and their response to you. But here you are at step two in the appeal process, and you didn't clarify your Article 38 appeal at the local union level. So we have fashioned a response to this, and it's been sent. We'll not get into that because they haven't received it yet. We'll take another week, and we'll see what their response is going to be. We expect that they'll probably answer this sometime through the week. And quite frankly, we may well agree that it has no merit at the local union level, because it's quite has to be decided by the president of the UAW, and he's really, or the him in concert with the IEB, and it's a man that's our president at the moment. So we'll have to make that determination, and we expect that they do the right thing for 750,000 existing retirees and approximately 861,000 retirees in waiting and retirees. So that's the majority of your membership out there. We're going to be watching you really, really close up there on high to see if you're going to do the right thing to protect our pension so it can't be in the future taken away arbitrarily, as was indicated by a pension plan expert attorney in this field. Okay, and that's why that we did this. This wasn't something we dreamed up. It was by and through a conversation with an attorney who's a pension plan expert that said we need to get this on the record, absolutely need to get it on the record. And I hope all the local unions were able to get it on the record, because I'd hate to see a decision come 12, 14 years from now and say, I'm only going to protect those locals who actually put it on the record. That would be an absolute travesty. Injustice, but we've seen some of those kind of things in the past, where if you didn't stick up for yourself way back when, they're not going to sanction you. Because remember, this is going to be in the face of dwindling pension funds by that time. So, having said all of that, again, you can see exactly how, with this answer, I'm looking right at it, and I'm looking at the answer we sent back in. But this is an Article 33 response to an Article 38 appeal. It's kind of like you had a car accident and you're in court over the car accident, and the judge is ruling on whether or not the sheriff can sell your house. They're two unrelated things, absolutely unrelated things, and that just goes to show you how much you can trust those in charge of our union these days. You should be able to trust that they answer what you put in, not answer something completely different. I can't imagine that anybody that was a true representative of people, members of our union, would answer in such a fashion. But that's the kind of people that we're dealing with here. They answered a completely different part of the Constitution. It's real simple. It's very clear. Article 38, Section 11. Article 38 is the only contract constitutional language that deals with elections. Okay, so that's about all I have to say. I mean, it has to, with regard to this issue, I want to get into. We did talk about it a little earlier. I want to talk about what their the next step is. This pension appeal, though, this election appeal that deals with pensions, is fluid. We're on top of it. If you get a response and you're unclear on how to answer it, get that into us through Facebook or to Faxer first at AOL, and we will take a look at it and try and give you the best direction to go with it. I imagine we'll see a number of these same sort of things, Article 33 responses to an Article 38 appeal. I mean, that really, I mean, your legitimacy went way out the window, IUAW, that you gave this local union this sort of advice. I just can't imagine that anybody down there in the legal department is actually sending this kind of stuff out to bifurcate this from 38 to 33, and then which one do you answer when you get to the next level? You're just doomed by doing that. So we've fashioned an answer. But again, if you're receiving these back in response, you had 7 days to get it in from the closing of your polls. And if you didn't get that in, then there's no opportunity for an Article 38 appeal. Depending on some of the responses here, we're going to get this to Dennis Williams' desk so that he can determine what he's going to do with it. It's going there, Dennis. You might as well just let them come because, there's a lot of them that are coming to you. Okay, there's more than you can play games with. And I got all day long to take a look at them and help these people to fashion an answer for you, okay? And I'm happy to do that if they're not able or willing or completely understand what needs to be said back. So I'm here to help you. The team is here to help you. Again, if you have a question on a response that you're getting, send it in to Faxer first, Faxer. The number one, ST, at AOL.com. And Donnie will get his email and share it with the team here, and we'll come up with something for you with regard to that. Okay? Now, having said that, you got something, Donnie? You want to jump in?
I was saying if they, when I send it in, if they do it that way, I will make sure you and Scott get that right away.
Right, thank you, because some of this is not necessarily time sensitive because in the you have 30 days from the time that you get these, but we don't want to be behind the curve either. We'd like to see this get up there as quick as we possibly can and get decided. Let's not forget that this is important stuff that we keep this pension, because as it turns out, the leadership in Congress would like to have Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, PBGC, eliminated. And as it happens, the Speaker of the House, Ryan, is on record of saying such. He'd like to see it gone. And if you didn't have that protection from the federal government as, protection under ERISA due to this came about in the middle 70s when the truck company REO, Rio Truck, went bankrupt and they lost their pensions over it. And they then formulated this ERISA protection for pensions. ERISA came into being then, that's been a good thing for people whose pensions went belly up for many, many decades now, 35 years. We're looking at 40 years now, I guess. I think it might have been 74 it came to be. So we're looking around 41 years that ERISA's been around. We want to make sure that law stays in place if we can. But if it's gone, we won't have that protection from the government. And should our younger friends and members in the union here, when they get in charge, if they just eliminate the pension, split it with the company, we'd be without because there wouldn't be any protection, pension protection from the government. So it's a good thing to keep in mind. Having said that, we still have 60 days from the ratification notification of General Motors and Ford and Chrysler to take this same issue on with regard to that. We'd like to see it being done with just Article 38, but if we have to, we'll get into an Article 33 appeal. And there's actually another one sort of pending with regard to Chrysler, and we'll get into that when we get a brother back that's a Chrysler brother and see if he wants to pursue that. I'm pretty sure he will, and he'll be back next week. So he's on vacation with his mom is ill. So we'll get with him, and he seems to be leading the charge there for the Chrysler brothers and sisters, and we'll see if he wants to pursue that one. But we'll kind of not let that out until it's time. You know, kind of like wine, wine before it's time, as you know. So the issue of voter impropriety at Ford Local 600 especially, it remains to be an issue. I have not seen anything where this has been challenged under the election language in the Constitution. This Article 38 could also apply to voter improprieties. It's been widely reported on. We do need to have statements or witnesses that are willing to stand up and say that this actually occurred and it happened to them. As soon as you get one or two, it'll be like a Niagara Falls. Everybody will pile on. But you have to have the one or two in order for it to start that. Now, the good thing is that a man that's run for president on the convention floor, the Constitutional Convention floor, the last two conventions, is a member of Local 600, Gary Wolkowitz. Okay, and he's aspired to be the man that runs this union. So I know Gary's strong because to be able to stand up just in front of the face of all those people and run when you have like 60 supporters out of the 1,000 people that are there voting is, it's something to be proud of, but it also takes a lot of courage. I would think that he has the courage to go and talk to the membership at his local union, Local 600, and see if he can vet a few people out and, make sure that they're actually, this actually happened to them. Identify them and vet that this happened, and then get statements. And then at this point, it would be an Article 33 appeal. That would go out, and if he actually gets some witnesses, there can be a National Labor Relations Board complaint filed as well. So a lot of stuff going on that's technical in these appeals. But it's something that we just simply need to do to protect ourselves. We can't have our union messing with these elections. It's just improper to do that. And there's language in I've been reviewing the language in the National Labor Relations Act, and it's very stringent, and there are some very strict rules and penalties for doing this. So my brothers and sisters, I'm going to talk directly right now to the Local 600 members. If you have had any impropriety put upon you in the voting process, I would encourage you to get with Brother Walkowitz, Gary Walkowitz, and let him know this, get a written statement to him, and then he can act on that as needed. He knows what to do. He's, you know, well experienced in this sort of thing. So Gary Walkowitz, we'll just see if you can help him to get this. He's from your local union. Okay, he's been elected official there. Okay, and we think highly of him. We'd like to see him act on this. Gary, you know, we're giving you a hand here. We hope you can get something done if there's been truly, truly improprieties at your local union. So having said that, we'll just sit back and watch now, brothers and sisters. We got a few things we talked to you about tonight. We got the Kohler folks out there. That's become a nationwide strike, they say. And send them beer money, $5. You know, it's simple. If everybody on this that's listening did that, it'd be a lot of money. They would skate through this strike. They really would. Donnie would affirm that, I'm sure. So, and then we talked about the pension plan appeal, and we've updated you. We got Article 33 answer to an Article 38 appeal. It just goes to show you the trust level that we have for our own union elected officials. And then we talked a little bit about this the improprieties at Local 600, alleged improprieties. And again, this is just my opinion and what I've read in the widely reported on issue. And then, of course, the education of the Tier 1s and Tier 2s, as Jeff Brown pointed out, we need to make sure that everybody understands, and I hope the people on this show or that are listening to this show understand that the Tier 2 people not only don't have a pension, they don't have health care in retirement either. And some time ago, I was talking about a list of things that the GM folks had that they would like to see put in place. And I said perhaps they should add that they should, because the current pension plan for the Tier 1s, effectively, is closed. But if they could open a new plan, create a new plan for the Tier 2, anybody hired after 2007. They could just create a new plan for them. And I think that's a real good idea. Then that would stop a lot of what's kind of going on here. But if they had their own plan besides this defined contribution 401k that they have, this would help them immensely as far as I'm concerned. But we didn't do that. Of course, the folks that negotiated the contract left them out to dry yet another contract. So it's the third contract that they've been left out to dry. One, that they stopped health care in 2007. They didn't do anything in 2011. And out here, in the face of enormous profits, after they chucked every little squirrel hole full of money, that they finally reported this little bit of, I'm saying little bit in the sense of $5 billion. That's nothing. You can rest assured that they've spent and squirreled away, you know, a lot more than the $5 billion reporting. So that's about what I got to say. Anybody else got anything there tonight?
Yeah. If you don't mind, maybe we have a little discussion. Real quick, before I forget, the GoFundMe, I posted that on the Blog Talk Radio's blog site. So we don't forget, the GoFundMe account is www.GoFundMe4ABFFVWC.
Forward slash.
It makes
forward slash.
research guide. It's not for the show. Make sure you put it down. It's for the colors strike. Because I've seen other things happen like that. And they thought they were supporting the show, paying for the show. The show costs money, but this isn't what this is about. So make sure they just don't pass over it. Make sure you tell them it's about the color strike.
Okay.
I'll try to find it later.
And again, I'll just go over what Scott just said again, because it's important. I hope you all got a pencil from the last time I said this. Again, it's GoFundMe.com/4ABSFVWC. Okay, let me do that slower. GoFundMe.com/4ABSFVWC. That's the link that takes you directly to this Polar Striker support fund. Okay, this is, as it says on the page, it's been taken over by, it's been turned over to UAW Region 4. And we certainly hope that they don't hold any of these monies back after we donate them. Okay, and boy, I would not want to be in their shoes if they held back. But because there's an accountability here, and they better have receipts for everything that they got received here. So that's what I would, just make sure, admonish them to do. Having said that, this is a tough time for these folks. I hope we can dig deep and just, you don't have to dig so deep. $5 isn't that much. If everybody on this show listening get $5, let me tell you something. They do well. They do really well. They would get through this, and they would, anybody that was in need would not be hurting. They would have money for them. And this is a good place to start to turn this whole mess around. Just support these people right here and stop the atrocities being put upon unions and working men and women in this country. Okay?
Right.
So this is a good place to start. So if we just shore them up just a little bit, and if it looks like they might need a little more, we'll be in touch with them. I'm sure maybe one of them will call into the show, and Donnie can get them on and tell us how they're doing, what the status is, and what the money situation is. And we encourage
them. Just a card, and I will send them a card and see if I can't get somebody on. It'd be nice to call somebody.
This GoFundMe that we're talking about, this isn't for the Blog Talk Show. This is for the Kohler Strike Fund that was set up to help our brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
No. Nobody gets this confused. This is for the Kohler Strike.
No.
Yeah. Once they get to the page, they'll see it though, too, fellas. I mean, once they get to the page, it's very clear that this is for the support of the striking Kohler workers. Okay.
Oh,
not
okay.
The Blog Talk Show. So yeah, once you go over to the page, it's clear. Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Okay,
I've never paid that something that way, so I don't have a clue. But I know somebody probably has, my wife. So I will, we send out some money tonight, and I hope everybody had a nice Thanksgiving. I'll tell you, I know you workers. I know Scott, Jeff Brown. Man, they need a break. It didn't sound like Jeff had much of a break. He writing letters too, and that's just a shame what they're doing. to the Teamsters.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you better believe that Daddy Hoffa would never allow that to happen.
No, I have to agree with you on that. I don't think Jimmy would have anything to do with this crap.
No. No.
To be honest with you. But his son is a little different.
Yep.
Just a little bit different. But we got about 49 people in the chat room. If you have a question or comment you'd like to make, I'll raise your hand by pushing one on your dial or your pad. And I'll put you right up. But if not, just sit back and listen. That'd be fine, too. I have the flu. I've never had it before. I am sorry. I sound like crap. That's why I let you guys do all the talking tonight.
Well, real quick, like I said, it is holiday weekend. We don't hold people up too much. But, you know, I did come across a couple things that kind of caught my attention. And, you know, it's upsetting to me because, you know, we all understand that the media most of the media is not friendly to labor. They're definitely, it appears to be sweethearts now of the UAW. And
right.
Our friends on Automotive News, at Automotive News that listens to this show, shame on you. Shame on you. And I'm going to tell you why. I just read this article that was put out today. It said that the higher UAW wages will push the Detroit 3 to find cost solutions. They said the Tier 2 phase-out makes PACs more expensive. Really? Really? Now, the gentleman that wrote this was Nick Bunkley. And I'm going to tell you, Nick, I think you need to go back in and read those contracts again, my friend, or talk to one of us. We'll tell you where to go look exactly and specifically of where they saved all this money that you said that we're going to cost them. They didn't phase out the Tier 2, at least not yet. They changed their name to Progression Workers. And what they did do was they allowed unlimited temporaries. So if you want to talk to me about cost solutions, really, you want to write this dumbass article, that's what it is. Really? You sound about as ignorant as the IEB does right now. I'm just telling you. That's my opinion. No, I don't think it's my opinion. That's my opinion. I'm just so upset when I read this kind of article. And talking about, you know, how this is going to be. You know, when I see you have talks with Jimmy settles in there in your article, that explains a lot. But, you know, there was one person that had a little bit of smarts to him in here, and that was they talked to Schwartz, who used to be, I believe it was Art Schwartz, used to be one of the negotiators. He, you know, he said, look, this whole thing, you know, there's a lot of things. There's a different lot of contracts that were a lot more expensive than this one. He said, if you had to rank this among the historical contracts, it is low. And then you have the Detroit Free Press also putting on an article yesterday. Said that the UAW talks unleashed frustration despite gains. We didn't get a lot of gains. I don't know why people keep saying this. The reports keep saying that we get gains out of this. Our pension language was changed. Our health care was changed and open-ended. We've seen products being moved out of the country during during negotiations, products being moved out of our country. That's our job,
right,
folks. Wake up. And these reporters are saying all this stuff. The one thing I will say about the Detroit Free Press article is at the end. This is what really caught my eye. It says tarnished leadership. And it reads as follows. One of the key questions going forward is whether the UAW's image has been permanently tarnished in the eyes of the members, the public and the automakers. I think the leadership's reputation has taken a beating. But I think once those checks start coming in, I think workers' memories will begin to fade and those workers are going to be sitting in a good place 4 years from now, Wheaton said. Chalkin agrees. He feels Williams and his leadership team handled the adversity well and were in tune with their members. They faced a limit of how much they could achieve at the table. Neither side got all it wanted. I think it's more vocal than deep, Shaken said of the bad mouthing. Most are aware of the gains they have. Really. I'm appalled at this article. And to think that we could be all bought off, folks, that's what that's saying. When your signing bonus signs up, you just keep your mouth shut and just realize how good they did for you. And I'm going to tell you what, that was Elisa Priddle and Brett Snavely from the Detroit Free Press. And I have half a notion to email Brett tomorrow and let him know that his article wasn't very well founded. And I don't know who they're talking to, but evidently they're definitely not talking to somebody like Leroy or Don or somebody like Jeff or myself, who are active workers who have to deal with this mess that they've got. They've got to call a contract.
They don't talk to the workers. They talk to Solidarity House or somebody at the in General Motors. They don't talk. That people put down WSWS, and that's your business. But they do talk to the people. They go out and they talk to the people and get their opinion. And
yeah, but
you know,
yeah, it's kind of interesting, Scott, that this Automotive News article is saying that. And even Brett Snavely would say something like that. I mean, they certainly seem to know better. But one thing I'd like to point out is during the negotiations, there are three renowned financial publications that came out and said that the UAW has thrown the membership under the bus. And that, as you pointed out to me, at one point, Forbes, Bloomberg, and the Wall Street Journal have all said the same thing. How could they get this horrible of a contract for their membership in the face of all these profits? Effectively saying the IUAW has thrown us under the bus, and now we have these Johnny-come-latelys coming along and sticking up for, oh, this is going to break the corporations for all these gains we got. I mean, think about this. Wages were frozen for 9 years. And they got pennies on the dollar. Pennies. They didn't even get a dollar raise after 9 years of nothing. So they're stifling I guess that's a good word, just stifling the tier ones to get the tier twos to catch up to them. And you've heard Scott Holdison on this very show talk about the same thing. They'll hold down the tier one wages until the tier twos will catch up to them. And essentially, you'll be working for tier two wages by the time they catch up to you, because they've just stopped in all regard the tier one, any wage progression. It's just horrible what's going on. You know, and then you look over there and you say, all right, well, how are they running the company, Snavely? Okay, let's take a look at that. First time quality. plus or minus 2.5% from 80% across the board. There are people who really knew how to run this company that are spinning in their grave with that sort of number. That means that effectively 20% profit going right out the door because they're having to rebuild it twice and having all of that inventory set around.
That's right.
As a repair. And that's a 9% cost just to have the inventory sitting around. We know these numbers, brothers and sisters, yeah. And then what about the recalls? Billions of dollars. It would have cost them, what, under a dollar to fix it? Under a dollar to make sure the proper spring was in these ignition switches.
Ignition.
And it cost them billions of dollars. And how many people died? They made a decision to murder people. And I still think it's criminal, and I still think there ought to be people at the highest level in these corporations, especially General Motors, go to jail for murder.
I am not going to argue. You're exactly.
So let's just take a look at it. I mean, think about those extra billions in the savings that they'd have, if they'd have just done it right the first time. In all these recalls, now they got airbag recalls and brake recalls and tri-axles that are in some of the models that are bad. I just can't imagine why they'd ever let that stuff get out into the public, you know, because they've made a decision. Oh, it'll only kill so many people. Just go ahead and run them. Well, that's a decision that should have never been made. And everybody's worried about, you know, and I am too, about these police officer shootings. We've had a number of them around the country. But we haven't had as many of those as what we've had deaths from General Motors. Why aren't you raising that flag, General Public?
That's right.
You know, people who write these articles, it just astounds me when you talk about cost. You got to think, just for a second, if you guys have any idea of the automotive industry and what you're writing about, if you have any idea about the labor costs and what it's costing, what the cost is of each vehicle is, and the sacrifices that men and women are making on that line, for the profitability of the corporation. We've told people how to figure this out. It's not that hard. I think the last time I figured it out, we were between $1.1 and $1.2 million. That was the profitability that each person contributed to the wealth of the corporation. Now, let's stop and think about that for a second. You got temporary workers in there making half wages. Understanding that you'll never have a full seniority worker. They're never going to hire an in-progress or a Tier 2 person ever again. They're going to hire more and more temporaries. That puts that labor cost extremely low. You know, and when Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and Bloomberg talk about these numbers, it seems like they got the idea. They really did get the idea. So why is it that the folks at the automotive news and the free press are badgering, they're trying to set up a portrait of doom and gloom of things to come in the midst of record profitability for all three. Really?
Right.
This is asinine, folks. Read these articles. If I was, I would ask every brother and sister listening to this show to send an email into Automotive News and the Detroit Free Press. And let these people know exactly how you feel about that. Evidently, they think you've got the world by the kolkuyan, so to say. That isn't the case. You know, we've got brothers and sisters that at some of these places, and I dare say it's going to happen next year. my crystal ball is broken right now, currently, but I would say that our brothers and sisters at next year need to hang on to their shorts, because it's coming. You know, you look at all these concessions that we've had, and Leroy's talked about, you know, what we haven't had for 9 years and what they did get us. You know, that's not real proud of. Something not to be very proud of at all. But this just upsets me, you know. These articles, I'm telling you.
Well, folks, they got it
up for us.
In the articles, it said we had the best, we got the best contract we've ever had. Didn't you read that?
Yeah, that's a fallacy. A fallacy.
Oh,
yeah.
There was a
victory. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, depends on who you're talking to.
Donnie, if you look at it, I mean, they've never made over $30 an hour. Okay, so now the chances is, you know, I'm going to bump them up there real close to being over $30 an hour by the end of the contract. Yeah, that's the most they've ever been paid. But guess what? The buy-in power that they're being paid is far less. Far less.
Hell.
And they're doing the work of 3 1/4 people on the line now. Okay? So their labor costs are just, you know, right through the floor. I mean, productivity has just gone right through the roof, and their labor costs are just nominal. Just not even, you know, it's not even a consideration anymore. And how can people sit there and say that this is the greatest contract of all time? Well, if that number was the cost of labor per car was another 10% higher, then you're talking about, yeah, now that's the greatest contract you've ever had, but not when it's down as low as it is. That's not a good contract, not even close. You know, I talk about, you know, being able to go out and pay for a brand new Corvette and have money left over from a year, you know, in the middle 70s, late 70s. Okay, you know, I mean, a Corvette, you know, I don't know, 60,000-70,000, the regular one, and the hot ones, and which is the kind of one that I purchased myself, they're up there 110. Some are as high as maybe $140,000. So, you know, when you consider that, and you had money left over after taxes, now you make if you're, you know, with overtime and everything, you're bumping around the price of a Corvette throughout the course of a whole year that you work. Not, there was a portion of your wages that you take to buy a Corvette. And I like to use the Corvette for a standard because it's something that has never, ever gone without an increase. Okay, that's the other thing that all of these writers that you're talking about right now have not considered. Cars have not gone without an increase on an annual basis. I can't remember a year where they didn't get MSRP bump, where the actual cost of the car, they didn't get a bump in it. And that's why trucks are, you know, $42,000 to $80,000. I mean, you're building them over there, Scott. You know how much they are. What's the sticker price on your cars or trucks leaving there now?
They vary from low 40s to upwards of over 80,000.
There you go. Yeah, the Martha Stewart version, as it's been called on the show before. Yeah, 80,000.
Yeah.
And they're getting their profit through, you know, model mix. In other words, they're building more of those. You know, but I see these lots full of them. So that's going to come home to roost pretty soon, too. You know, just because you're building an $80,000 vehicle and booking it at the end of the line as a profit, and then you go park it and call it in transit and nobody's accountable for it, doesn't mean that you really made that profit now, did it? Some of the stockholders ought to be looking into that. Anybody really
right.
paying attention? Yeah.
No, you know they
you
don't.
Know,
great.
Kristen Dreisick, who writes for the Center of Automotive Research, I believe, or CARS, she did, I found this somewhere, she said on a per-vehicle basis that she projects that GM's costs will drop from $24 from 2014 to 2019 to $2,350. GM is offering retirement incentives to 4,000 production workers so it can use younger, cheaper replacement, and it can hire more temporary workers to reduce the cost of pay increase for permanent employees. I mean, you guys put this in here. Didn't you look at what you were printing on your article? I mean, she gave you the answer right there. Temporary workers will reduce the cost of pay increases for permanent employees. But there, it boggles my mind and infuriates me. Like I said, if I was people, I'd get a hold of Automotive News. The article was UAW, higher UAW wages will push Detroit redefine cost solutions. And the article was written by Nick Bunkley. And then the Free Press article was 2015 UAW talks unleashed frustration despite gains. And that was written by Elisa Priddle and Brent Snavely of the Free Press. So, and if the listeners maybe might want to go and check that out. So, we got, I guess, is there anything else that we need to really bat around right now?
How about you, Jeff?
No, I'm good.
You're good, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope everything looks out for your uncle, and we'll be thinking about him, and that's a shame. That's a terrible shame. And what Kohler people, we're going to try to look out for you, and if everybody listens to the show, is the same on and all these Facebook pages do the same. You should have a pretty good Christmas and go along with that $200 that you'll get from the UAW. So hopefully that'll work out. And we'll do that tonight.
Well,
and Jeff, I hope your health is better or feeling better.
No, it's getting worse, and I was really hoping to retire, but this new contract has forced me to wait until I'm 62, and I am not going to make it that long. Due to my health.
Right.
So, I'm more disappointed than that.
I got to do what I got to do, I guess. Yeah, well, I had to get out of there for health reasons, and I was 60. No, I wasn't even 60, 59. I had to, so you do the same, man. And we'll fight the battle down the line, you know.
Yeah.
Health comes first. Health comes first.
Yep, it sure does.
And,
I
tell you, both of you guys, I don't know, you're both truck drivers, four truck drivers, driving around, bouncing up and down, my God. My back would fall apart.
Well,
a
post on another Facebook page blasting the show here. And I don't remember who posted it, but they were saying that Dick was the star of the show. And I kind of... the show was rehearsed before we did it. We lit some people up on that one.
Yeah.
I'm afraid you will speak my mind.
I tell you, I read that too. We rehearsed in the afternoon. I couldn't believe what I was reading. Dick mentioned something afterwards, and he knows this show isn't rehearsed. But hey, you know, that's how they want to be. That's fine. That's fine. They're not hurting us any. I like it when we had a lot of emails. We got to have more people talking. We have, you know, more ideas, and we do now. We do now. Yeah, God, you're back. You're talking. You get to talk instead of being told to go post something.
It was kind of funny because he would send me by email the link he wanted posted on the page, but he couldn't figure out how to send the link on the page. So,
oh yeah,
he couldn't even do that. But he was able to send it to me, but he couldn't figure out how to put it on the page.
I have to tell you. I'm not a wizard on a computer myself. I'm with Dick. And Dick is smart. Oh, my gosh. You know, he knows his stuff. He knows his stuff. But it's got to be other people involved. People were just not calling in. Now we have people calling in we have people, we had some more people that came back, and I'm not saying it's Dick's fault at all, because Dick's a very smart man, but he knows his stuff, there's no question about it, he knows his stuff, and, it's time to stop,
yep.
And he's a good guy, and
I just want to wish everybody, you know, a happy holiday again. I hope everybody had a good holiday. Take the rest of the night. Enjoy the time with your family, the third shifters. We got to go in tonight, but
first shift,
second shift people, you know, you got to enjoy the rest of the night with your family. Get looking forward to a Christmas. Let's not forget our Kohler brothers and sisters. Help them out as best as we can to get them through this time of the year, which is by design. They always do bad things around the holidays. We know that.
Right.
Also, let's not forget to talk to our brothers and sisters, if anybody knows people over at Next Year, help get them some guidance and some information, and if we can help them out in any way, we'll be glad to do that. But other than that, I think we're probably all wrapped up for the night.
Okay, we'll do that. And we'll be back next Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'll get my emails hopefully by then up and running and fixed. And I want to thank everybody that, we got a lot of people in the switchboard. And Jeff, man, I'm just glad you're back. I really am.
Nice.
Yeah, and you keep us posted on what's going on, and you come back every Sunday. You're part of the show.
Okay.
You've always been part of the show. And Leroy, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and I know Scott did, and I know I did.
I had a great Thanksgiving. I was able to volunteer and help some folks that their holiday wasn't going to be as good as what we got for them. So I got a lot of joy out of supporting those people. But for now, I'm going to say goodnight to everybody and shout out to all the listeners everywhere, you know, all across the country. We won't go into that because it's a holiday weekend and we know you want to get back to your family. So have a good night.
Yeah.
Good night from Leroy.
Good night, Leroy. Jeff, see you next week in Scott and all the people in the switchboard. Gosh, we got a lot of them. So I don't think I didn't think the people realized we'd be on. So, but anyway, we'll talk to everybody next Sunday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So, here, everybody.
And we hope you feel better, too.